Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast.
Seriously, honestly, it's 2017. What are you guys doing over there? You're having to do all these changes to Super Bowl stuff because of rain? Rain? When I was a kid, we had to wade through snow to get to school, and we had to go, yeah? And you can't do this because it's been raining a little bit. Oh, poor you.
When you were a kid, you were building football stadiums in the rain?
Absolutely. We were living life in snow. Yeah, well, there was no stopping, like, oh, no, it's raining. We can't go to school. We better cancel this. I mean, it's rain, for God's sake. You should be embarrassed for your country. I mean, rain, for goodness sake.
Yes, Neil, that's the list of reasons why we should be embarrassed for our country.
And that is another show. So let's get this football show started right now.
Sorry, Jay, I can't talk now. A cloud has just appeared in the sky.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the, well, allow me to retort edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader, here with a slew of super fans. And what I'm referencing is our Monday show. If you didn't hear it, go back to iTunes or TuneIn or Stitcher or anywhere great podcasts are heard. Check out our archive. Because on our Monday show, the super fans decided to slaughter some sacred cows. And on this show, we're going to resuscitate some of those sacred cows, or we might actually end up killing them and slaughtering them some more. We'll see. We'll find out, because we have a whole bunch of different super fans on today's show. And some of these guys I've had the pleasure of podcasting with before, but some of these guys, are usually Sunday regulars. So let me try and introduce everybody as best I can. For our usual Thursday crew, I will start with our man across the pond, our Redskins super fan, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay. Hey, guys. Yeah, Jay, I've been here long enough to know that, well, I'm a bit skeptical about your introduction there. This is just going to be Patriots today, isn't it?
No. We only have one little tiny bit of Patriot news, and I've okay. marked it for the very end of the show.
One tiny bit for about 45 minutes.
Yeah. Right. And then, of course, you know, a sacred cow that we'll be talking about, I'm sure. But that's it. Next up for our Thursday regulars, it's our Eagles man, James. Hello, James.
Hey, Pods. You sure it's not going to be Patriots today? Because I get the distinct feeling that your one little tidbit could take the whole show.
No, the one little tidbit is really a tidbit, but I totally forgot about the sacred cow. The sacred cow is going to take up a little bit of time, but it won't take up that much time, I promise.
Well, hey, bashing sacred cow is what we do.
I promise.
The truth is slowly coming out, isn't it?
Listen, I'm not going to make any promises about times. Every time I make a promise about how long something's going to take, it always goes way longer than I expected. And that is true in everything. Here's Rob, who's our Buffalo Bills super fan. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Pod. How you doing today?
It's a fantastic day. I'm surprised you didn't decide to take a shot at my Patriots love. It was a perfect opportunity for you. I already
came into this assuming we were going to talk about the Patriots for about an hour and a half. So, you know, okay. We'll see how it goes.
Not an hour and a half. It's not going to be that long, I promise. Because James, our Texans superfan, has a sacred cow that he needs to defend. Hello, James.
Hello, Pod. I mean, 60% of the time, your time estimates work out all the time.
There you go. That's exactly what we like to say. And I saved the man with the best voice for last. That is our Chiefs superfan, Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hey, how's it going? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's not even fair. The sultry tones that come from your voice pipes. I wish I had those vocal cords.
There's probably something on your board for that.
Maybe. So somewhere if I had a board, but I don't. So anyway, hey, you guys have been great out there in Next Fan Up land. We should come up with a name for you guys, because I can't call you super fans because the super fans are on the show. We have a couple of responses on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/NFU podcast. And of course, Twitter. We're at NFU Podcast. So we're going to talk about a little bit of that. But before we get into, oh, and I forgot, I have a special guest on the show today, too. His name is Clint Daly, host of the Daily Dose podcast. We have a nice conversation about the Broncos and the sacred cow that I'll be resuscitating. You know, we love hearing from you guys. So keep sending in those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com or anywhere else. And we're looking for a Lions and a Buccaneers super fan. All other positions are still currently full. But for whatever reason, you guys in Detroit and you guys in Tampa Bay, you don't seem to want to get behind your team, which I don't understand because I think both teams have an arrow pointed up. Are the Lions pointed up? Rob, Lions going up?
Lions are pointed up. I feel almost partially responsible that we don't have a Tampa super fan. I mean, I freaking live right by here. Unfortunately, everyone that lives here is not from, no one that lives here is from Florida. So everyone likes some other team. So you don't run into Tampa fans all, as often as you think.
I have family in Tampa. It's crazy. I don't understand what, why it's so difficult to get a Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan, but apparently it is. Our former Tampa Bay Buccaneers super fan was from across the pond, Neil.
Yeah, Tampa Bay, a very popular team over here. I'll see what I can do, Jay. But Tampa, definitely on the way up, no?
Tampa is absolutely on the way up, one of the up-and-comers, and we'll be talking about all of the teams in the next month. As June comes, that means it'll be division preview time, where we'll break down each show by division to talk about each and every team and their chances for the upcoming season. And in that upcoming season, there's going to be some new rules, gentlemen, and we will start with the player celebrations. Apparently, NFL will not stand for no fun league anymore. And I will start with you, James Eagles. What are your thoughts here on the NFL lessening up the leash a little bit and letting the players have a little fun out there?
Meh. I mean, the best celebrations are still going to get flagged as far as I'm concerned. Your best ones are pretty much taunting and jawing at the other team as you cross the goal line. So I know things like if a cornerback picks off a pass and runs it back the other way while he's taunting the other team on the sideline, especially if it's at the end of the game or he's laughing at the wide receiver he just, you know, intercepted the pass from, that's still going to draw a flag. We know that Bennett in Seattle, his nice little three-pump celebration will still get flagged. So and dunking over the goalpost is still going to get flagged. So, I mean, those by far are the best celebrations. They're the most comical as far as I'm concerned. But everything else, group celebrations, snow angels, rolling on the ground, using the ball as a prop, blah. I mean, especially using the ball as a prop. Without Chad Johnson and the receiver who shall remain nameless in the league using the ball as a prop because I thought they were the most creative at doing that, it's pretty much bland across the board as far as those celebrations.
I did not expect that response. Nick, how about you?
I'm all for it. You know, I mean, I think it's always been something that's like really bizarre to me. And whenever I'm watching the NFL with someone who's not like a super like football fan, that's always the thing that confuses them the most. Like, wait, they're being penalized for excessive celebration? Like, what? Like, you know, like what did they do? Like, oh, well, they lied down on the ground for half a second. And so that's 15 yards. Like, I mean, I think the rules have been are way outdated. And granted, I mean, we'll see if these guys get a little bit out of hand. I mean, I think the idea of having like the team celebrations where you're going to try to set up something with like eight different guys, like I don't want this thing chewing up like 45 seconds of my football watching time. But I do think that the penalties have been dumb and it's been a long time coming.
Neil, how about you?
Yeah, I'm like Nick. I'm all for it too, Jay. I think it'd be great for kids, no, to copy their heroes in their special celebrations. As long as they keep it clean and keep it within the watershed sort of time zone celebrations, so we don't have any of this twerking. Like, was that Antonio Bryant or
Antonio Brown twerking on Monday night? You should remember that quite well.
I don't want to see any kids doing that, but I'd quite like to see kids copying other teams and guys' celebrations. Quite like the group celebration thing back again. Let's the offensive lineman come in and celebrate with the player who scores. Yeah, I'm all for it. You know, why not? Come on. Let's let's celebrate what is a great thing, scoring a touchdown.
I did not plan on going to everybody, but I might as well now. Rob, what are your thoughts here on the celebrations?
I mean, listen, I know that they're not, you know, they're not letting everything be allowed, but, you know, it's kind of nice that they are kind of pulling it back a little bit and at least giving a little bit of leeway to the players. I mean, it's going to be better than it was the year before. And I do think it's good. I know that, you know, Richie Incognito has taken a touchdown ball and spiked it. So, you know, for me, I think it's a good thing being able to get the offensive line and involved in things like that.
All right, Texans, James, you get the last word here.
I mean, I guess I could disagree just to be contrarian, but I'm not going to. I mean, it's going to be fun. Like, can't wait for the renewed debate of why did that celebration get a flag while this one did not. And, you know, it's really just changing the debate now as opposed to no celebrations. We get to parse whether Antonio Brown should have been flagged for excessive celebration as opposed to, you know, one of the offensive linemen because he got there a little too late for the group celebration.
I agree. I think that'll be problematic is going to be we're putting it back into the referee's head. Well, some of the celebrations are penalties, but others are not. That's my real only problem to me. It doesn't seem like it's that difficult to write up a rule that just says if you're taunting the other team, if you are pointing at the other team, if you are flying like a jet plane, weaving in and out of the other players, that is taunting the other team. And while Eagles James apparently is all for that, that's the celebration that should be flagged. Ball is on the ground. And you're pumping it up. You're putting life back into the ball. That is not taunting. That's fun and that's funny.
Hey, Pod, they're not 8-year-old kids. Everybody's getting paid. You want to stop them from celebrating? Stop them from scoring. That's what defense is out there for.
Oh,
there you go.
That's fair. That's a fair point.
That is ridiculous. All right. So other rules changes that came about. Overtime, instead of being 15 minutes, will now only be 10 minutes. To me, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I also am still a big fan of let's bring back real sudden death. Enough with this. Well, if you kick a field goal, the other team still gets a chance. Like, that just seems ridiculous to me. Nick, your thoughts on overtime?
I mean, it seemed like an unnecessary change to me. Even McKay, whatever his name is, the guy with the sort of announced this, he sort of said, like, this isn't about safe, or rather, it's not about, like, making the games more interesting. It's about safety. And by safety, he means basically that a few of the coaches complained that their players were really tired by playing on a full overtime and then having to play on the road the next week or whatever. They couldn't get in, like, good practices or whatever because of the extra 15 or 20 snaps that they got in those overtime games. But apparently the guy who was most outspoken on this was Bruce Arians, who was primarily was complaining because his team was so tuckered out after that 6-6 tie against the Seahawks, where they, you know, missed like 14 field goals or whatever. And it's like, okay, but that's just the cost of doing business, dude. If you're not going to be able to score 7 points and the overtime drags on that long, yeah, you're going to wear out your team. But like, that, for one thing, those are the exceptions. And B, it's like, you know, you have opportunities of closing out that game. It's not the game's fault that you were still there. And I don't know. I kind of like the, you know, if one team scores a field goal, at least give the other team a shot at doing something. Just because you can kick a field goal, you only have to move 30 yards in that case. I mean, it's not true sudden death to me as long as the, you know, the touchdown thing is being kept in. But in terms of like just the length, like I think it affects very few games, but I think it was, I don't know. I like the long overtime. I think the best baseball games are like the extra innings games. I mean, those are the most interesting games this year, at least for the Chiefs, were the ones that dragged into overtime and it was really back and forth. I don't see any need to like, oh no, we can't give these guys 5 more snaps. Let's just end it right now.
You guys mentioned Patriots today. I was listening to the New England Patriots PFW Weekly podcast where they were talking about this particular rule change. And to answer one of your questions, Neil, apparently there were 22 games in the last 5 years where this rule would have changed the outcome of the game because they went
to the full 15 minutes. So 22 games in 5 years does seem like a little bit more than I would have expected. Although Texans James, I'm sure, has can break down the statistical percentage of what that actually is and will let me know that it's too small a sample size. But the, you know, to me, it's not a TV thing because obviously if you're already 10 minutes over, it's too late now. You've already broken the TV window. A safety thing is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Is 5 minutes really going to make that big a difference? No. And it's certainly not going to change that much from playing on Sunday to playing on Thursday. To me, that's the rule that needed to be changed. It's not you need to shorten overtime. It's you need to get rid of the Thursday night game. That's the rule that needed to be changed.
They got to get more money.
Well, you're not getting any more money in overtime. It's free football. That's the right. As soon as overtime begins, we're like, all right, let's gear up for some free football.
So, right. Trust me. I completely agree. I think the rule that needs to be changed for overtime is that if the team goes down and kicks a field goal, the other team should have to score a touchdown, not match a field goal, force them to actually score like a real score. Other than that, the game, you know, the game should end because really we only need two possessions of OT. If you want to give each team a chance to possess the ball, fine. In that scenario, unless neither team scores at all, then, you know, the 10-minute rule will make sense. But honestly, if Team A goes down and kicks a field goal, Team B should not get the luxury to go down and kick a field goal to extend this thing longer. Force them to score a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of the tie, but Neil, I know in your country, ties are like, you know, every other day.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's quite right. Like, just in soccer terms, my team Liverpool played 38 league games, and they drew 10 of them. So there were 10 ties there. But you said 22 games would have had their result altered. Would that mean, do you mean 22 of those games would have ended in ties?
Yeah. Because the games went past.
That is a huge number.
No, that's a huge number. No, that's hugely speculative, though. Right. So like if you take 5 minutes out of like the third quarter, right, because that's basically what you're proposing or the equivalent of it. It just means that instead of taking the full play clock from it's not like you're taking the last 5 minutes off of the overtime. You're taking the middle 5 minutes out because you're still going to run a hurry up offense when there's only 5 minutes left in this overtime period. So, I mean, they say that it's going to impact 22 games. What it means by that is 22 games went past the 10-minute mark. Last year was actually kind of an anomaly with how many did. You're right. I do actually have the numbers. It only would have saved us about 24 minutes of football last year, this rule. And that has a lot to do with the fact that we had two ties last year. So there's, you know, right. 10 minutes right there. Most years, this is going to save less than 10 total minutes. And it won't necessarily increase the number of ties because, again, you're still going to have a team running their hurry-up offense. It won't cut down on the number of snaps by that much because you're just cutting out the middle time the time prior to a team running their hurry-up offense.
Why not just cut overtime altogether? What change would that make to the game?
In a regulation would pretty much still be tied.
Right.
But some teams that opt to go for that tie, say they are. But you still have those coaches that, you know, are looking at saving their job. Let me not take this L. Let me kick this 22-yard field goal instead of actually making an attempt for the end zone to try to get the go-ahead score.
Yeah, it'd be a question of whether teams would like to win the game or whether teams would be happy to draw the game. It'd be interesting. Thing to see in the NFL.
Well, just to throw out there, like one other potential variant, I mean, not to totally make this overtime today, but I kind of like what James, his suggestion of like each team gets a, you know, one possession and it like, so if, you know, first team scores a field goal, second team scores a touchdown, they win. I mean, I like the idea of just making it like PKs. I mean, like, you know, where you have in soccer where each team gets their possession, they line up and like, and basically as soon as a team misses one, or if a team scores a touchdown, the other team can only get a field goal or vice versa. Like that, like just let that resolve itself. And like you even allow the team, you know, who's kicking off, like if they want to try an onside kick, and go nuts like they can. But either way, it's going to be single based on possessions, not on, you know, a clock.
What the hell? At that point, why don't we just line up the special teams for both teams on either side of the field and put 2 minutes on the clock and let them kick as many field goals as they can make? And then whoever has the most field goals at the end of the 2 minute period wins the game. Why not? Let's just.
We should go
back 5 yards successfully. Can't make it easy.
At the end of the game, just do a QB skills challenge. That's it. Done.
Or
just like with the penalty shots, just do a skills challenge.
Oh boy!
What you could do, Jay, is just either do a 2-point shootout at the end of the game, or else we could just to lead us on a little bit. We could say the team whose quarterback has the best QBR wins.
Oh, he's teasing the sacred cow conversation still to come. Two other rule changes real quickly. And Neil, it's your fault for dragging this on, because these were rule changes you wanted to talk about. The cut down during the preseason has been changed. So teams no longer will go from what I think it's 93 to 75 man rosters. They can go straight. They're going to go straight from 93 to 53 man rosters. So they got rid of the middle cut down day.
Yeah, I think up to this point, the cut down to 75 was prior to the last preseason game. And now the change is that it will go from 90 to 53 in one go 2 days after the final preseason game. And, well, this will have an effect on the fans. I wouldn't buy a fourth preseason game ticket anyway, but I certainly wouldn't buy it after this change. But secondly, it's probably quite good for the players who are going to be getting cut. They will get that one game, because no starters will play in that game at all, even less than happens now. They'll get a chance to showcase their skills to the other teams across the league. So an interesting one. I think it was proposed by my team, this change. So clearly some wise thinking from Washington.
Well, and it'll also give them a chance to showcase their skills for the Arena Football League, the Canadian Football League.
Yeah.
They've
got to make a living, haven't they?
Exactly.
It's going to cut down ticket sales, isn't it? Because everybody knows now that the players playing in that game are going to be the guys who are disappearing 2 days later.
Well, the season ticket
holders. That's already the case in the fourth.
Well, and
it's going to be even more so. Yeah,
the season ticket holders have to buy those tickets anyway. So that's.
I would say my only two quick thoughts on this are just that, one, it's unfortunate from the standpoint in that it eliminates some of the drama on Hard Knocks. There's not going to be that obvious, like, you know, eight of your favorite guys are going to get fired that week. But two, I think it's going to be interesting to see how teams approach it, because I don't think they're just going to like hold on to these guys and wait until the cut down day. I think you'll see now that there's no longer, they're kind of like waiting for one cut down day and see who the other teams release and things like that. I think the teams are just going to be churning those bottom of the roster guys all throughout camp. And I think, you know, we'll see, rather than a couple of cut down days, just like teams making transactions every day would be my guess.
But Nick, isn't it the case that when your team enters camp, that you probably know of the 53 players on the roster, barring injury, you probably know 50 of them, 48 of them to 50 of them on day one of camp?
Yeah. I think it depends on the team.
Depends on the team. I'd say probably a minimum 40 to 45. Because you do look for the valuation is mainly for those last 10, 12 guys at the end of the roster, because they pretty much make up your special teams. You have a longer time of evaluation. You probably won't make boneheaded decisions like my Eagles did last year by cutting a certain quarterback who happened to win a ring with Tom Brady. But, you know, if the evaluation, I mean, and he was cut down at the 75 point. So if he had actually stayed on the roster to the end of preseason, you know, that guy, you know, he'd probably still be around, you know, in the Eagles uniform, at least helping out secondary instead of being, what was he, the nickel and dime back up in New England, you know, helping them out win a championship. So the evaluation process, you look at guys who, you know, are pretty much on the fence, and you get more time to evaluate, to make a conscious decision instead of just a knee-jerk reaction. Oh, here's the cut down to 75. These guys have to go no matter what.
Well, I thank you for that, James. But I mean, no one has fed the Patriots more players than Rob's Buffalo Bills. So
we know.
I just wanted to get in a shot at
Rob's. I know the Bills are the Patriots minor league franchise. I get it.
That's fine. You still pay $5 million for a 35 catch wide receiver. That's fine.
It's quite all right. We had the money. We could afford it. So,
yeah, I know. Enjoy it now. Whaley's gone. So our cap is no longer going to be a mess.
There you go. Speaking of cap and salary considerations, this last rule could have a slight impact there. As injured reserve, you will now be allowed to take two players back onto the regular season roster off of the injured reserve, which I think is, again, I don't understand the injured reserve rule in the first place. I think if you get hurt, it'd be nice to keep you off the roster until you're no longer hurt. I don't understand why you have to be on the roster, why you can't have any opportunity to come back, other than I know certain teams, and they might be located in the Northeast and talk with a funny accent, will, you know, probably play games with that rule. I don't know. I'm just speculating.
Probably. You mean like they have been playing games with the rule for like the last 17 years?
I don't know what you're talking about, bro.
No, okay.
Neil, what you wanted to bring this up. What are your thoughts here on the injured reserve rule?
I think it possibly says quite a lot about the improvements in medical science, where players are getting fixed up much quicker than they used to be. And there's also something here about just about hard cash, isn't it? And guys, expensive players get injured and have to, you previously had to sit on the IR for the whole season, got the salary, and I don't think organizations probably particularly like that a great deal either, and knowing that guys are doing nothing for their cash. So I like it. I think it's probably the start of an increased number. Maybe next year, the year after, it'll be 3-4 players. We want to see the best players on the field, and it's just ridiculous having a player, one of your top players, sitting for half the season, likely, recovered from injury, but can't get back into the team. It's ridiculous and it's outdated, so I want to see it back. More players.
Last bit of news before we get to our guest here, the Super Bowl shuffle, not the song, but they needed to make some changes because the LA stadium construction has been delayed due to rain, which I thought was interesting. It never rains in LA. Just so you now understand that this year's Super Bowl will be held in Minnesota, new stadium. Then they're going to Atlanta, new stadium. Then to Miami, a refurbished stadium. Tampa Bay, are they doing changes to Tampa Bay? Is that the deal?
No. Tampa Bay is basically
Tampa Bay is just really nice.
LA spot.
Tampa Bay is a real nice place, except they don't have fans there, apparently.
No, no fans, but tons of great restaurants and tons of beach.
So Tampa Bay will take over where LA was going to host, and then LA will get the Super Bowl in the year after, and that is a new stadium. So 4 out of the 5 stadiums, pretty brand new. So there you go. Let's talk to our special guest. It's my pleasure now to bring in our special guest this week. His name is Clint Daly. He is the host of the Daily Dose podcast, which you can find on iTunes or anywhere great podcasts are heard, including Blog Talk Radio, which might be a key as to why he's a guest on my podcast. Hello, Clint. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. You know, it's funny. I love doing these cross promotion interviews with the different guys that are on Blog Talk Radio that are talking sports all the time, but I don't know a lot about you guys. So it's great to have you guys in the podcast and talk a little bit about, you know, where you're from and how you got into all this. So I noticed that you're in Denver. I'm assuming you're a big Broncos guy.
I am. I'm a huge Denver Broncos fan, born and raised here in Denver. And that's a little bit of how I kind of got into the whole podcasting thing, was just being a Bronco fan and a Bronco writer.
Nice. Where do you write?
I write for Mile High Sports Magazine. It is here in Denver. We cover all things Colorado sports and Rocky Mountain region. But I did write a little bit for Bleacher Report. I did write a little bit for an NFL website called Cover 32, and I've been writing now for 10 or 15 years. And prior to that, I was a high school basketball coach. So my whole thing with my podcast was that I didn't just want to be the fan. I didn't just want to be, the typical nonsense, hot take kind of stuff. Because of my coaching background, I wanted to bring a little bit of, here's what's actually going on. Mm. Here's actually some common sense of why coaches do what they do and why teams sometimes do what they do. And it might not go the right way, but we actually look at it a little bit differently than just rah-rah and smash the beer can on our head.
You mean like going into a season with Trevor Siemian or the other kid? I already forget his name. Look at that.
See, I'm a little bit concerned. But I understand that. I know there's a lot of people, hey, Denver's going to take a huge step back this year, and they very well might. But the defense is pretty good. And Peyton Manning in the last year, while he has still had the cerebral part of his game, he couldn't throw the ball more than 10 or 15 yards. So you can get by with an average quarterback if you are very, very good around him.
The difference, though, and I noticed this difference, too, when Manning took over for Osweiler in that game against the Chiefs, the Chiefs played differently against Manning, not because Peyton Manning could throw the ball deep or whatever. They played differently against him because he's Peyton Manning. And I don't, and you don't have that advantage anymore. It doesn't matter if it's Trevor Siemian or the other guy, because they both are the same guy. It's not like the guy's coming in and like, oh God, it's Peyton Manning. He knows a thing or two about a thing or two out here on this field. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have that advantage of being Peyton Manning.
No, you don't. And the thing about Peyton Manning, what he couldn't do physically, he could do mentally. And you could see him as he took the snap. I already know where I'm going with this football. And I already know who's going to be open based on what I've seen pre-snap. You don't have that anymore. And as a result, you'd better upgrade this offensive line and you better find a running game. Now, if you upgrade the line, you find a running game, then you can do some things. If they can't do that, doesn't matter. Like you said, if it's Trevor Siemian, if it's the other guy, Paxton Lynch, they're going to be in trouble. If they can develop some running game, keep defenses at least a little bit honest, then it could be a different situation. That defense is still very, very good.
By the way, I'm just going to peel back the curtain. It's early morning on a Wednesday, and I'm looking at a very busy day ahead of me, which is why I could not think of Paxton Lynch's name. I kept wanting to call him Bryce Petty, but I know he's the horrible quarterback over in New York, not in Denver.
I have heard some things about Paxton Lynch that scare me a little bit, worries me a little bit. I didn't like him coming out of Memphis. He's not polished. When I just watch him, I just watch his footwork. It looks like a high school player. I think Trevor Siemian will end up being the starter. I don't think he's even close to ready. I don't think Lynch is even close. He's got a cannon for an arm, but he is not even close to being an NFL quarterback right now.
Who's your offensive coordinator now?
That will be Mike McCoy. He comes back after his years as head coach in San Diego. We did also grab Bill Musgrave to be the quarterback's coach, who was the offensive coordinator in Oakland. Now, I love Gary Kubiak. I do. He played here. You know, it goes back quite a ways here in Denver. His offenses throughout his career as a coach have been horrible. As a head coach, and he usually had Rick Dennison as his offensive coordinator, those offenses were always, always very, very average. To bring back McCoy, to bring in Musgrave, they'll probably start using the tight end a little more. They'll get away a little bit from the zone blocking scheme, but they could actually look a little bit better offensively this year.
Well, we'll see what happens there. You know, on Sunday, our superfans went and decided to slaughter a few sacred cows, which we're going to get into on the, yeah, we're getting into that on this podcast a little bit later with some of the other superfans that weren't on that Sunday show. You have any sacred cows that you want to take out to the field and slaughter?
I have so many sacred cows. I love slaughtering sacred cows. I love the Tom Brady one. I'm not saying Tom Brady is not one of the greatest, but I do love the Tom Brady one because I do think We are quick. Let me throw this one out there to you. Super Bowl victories in general, I think, should be slaughtered, especially as a quarterback specifically. Just saying I have a Super Bowl victory doesn't necessarily mean you're one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Because no. We do remember the Mark Rippons and the Jeff Hostetlers and the Joe Theismans and the Doug Williams, and there's a number of guys.
Eli Manning
that have won. I mean, Joe Flacco, Eli Manning's won too. Based on Super Bowls, Eli Manning's better than Brady. He beat him twice.
Yeah.
Super Bowl victories as a quarterback, a little bit overrated.
That part, I agree. Where Monty went off the rails, and you should hate Monty because he's the Oakland Raiders superfan. Where Monty went off the rails is he said one phrase, and whether he meant it or not, whether it was just a slip of the tongue, he said, it's not even close. Now, that's where I have a problem. Because
I understand that. Yeah.
And it puts me in a position because everyone knows that I'm a Drew Bledsoe guy. And so me having to defend Brady, just it makes everything about me just it makes my skin crawl. But to not acknowledge the fact that Tom Brady isn't the GOAT. And while I will go back to that Super Bowl, the score was 28-3, Clint. And whether or not you want to blame the Atlanta coaching for allowing the Patriots to get back into that game, Tom Brady was the reason that game ended the way that it did. It wasn't because of anything else. I mean, James White had a great game too, but Tom Brady put that team on his back, never gave up, and willed that team to a victory in the first ever overtime Super Bowl.
Play in that game was not made by Tom Brady, though. It was made by Dante Hightower. The sack on Ryan that flips the position, flips the ball, and changes the game completely, probably the biggest hit. I'm not saying Tom Brady shouldn't be in the conversation.
Two scores that have to happen, though, after that sack.
I agree. And like I said, I'm not saying Tom Brady shouldn't be in the conversation. I'm saying he's the end-all, no questions asked, greatest quarterback. Hey, if I drop Dan Marino in on that team, he's going to win some championships.
Listen. First of all, my belief is your current president was the greatest quarterback of all time in John Elway.
I agree with you on that, but I look biased if I say that.
I have now put Brady above Elway, and then Montana is right below him. And then I have Marino somewhere in there. I mean, Marino, I don't want to put a lot of weight on Super Bowl victories or Super Bowl appearances, but at the same time, you have to put a little bit. I mean, it has to come into the judgment just a little bit.
It has to weigh in there. It does. But you also have when I look at the quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls that weren't good, that makes me question it. And when I look at some of the great quarterbacks that didn't win Super Bowls, I've also got to question it on that side, too. You look at obviously, Marino, a Fran Tarkington, a Dan Fouts. Kenny Anderson was always on horrible teams, never played with any talent. He was a really, really good quarterback. Bill Walsh loved Anderson when he was in Cincinnati, still before he went to San Francisco. There's a number of guys. Hey, there's 32 other guys on the field that determine the outcome of those Super Bowls. It's not just the quarterback. There's a lot of overhype on that quarterback situation. Like I said, I'm not saying Brady's not in the conversation. He is. Is he just the end-all, be-all quarterback of all time? Well, here's always my question, too. We always look at could we bring Johnny Unitas up today and have him play in today's game? Well, let him train and let him adjust, and I'm sure we could. Could we put Tom Brady even back in the 80s with guys diving around his knees and guys punching you in the throat? And not only was it not flagged, it was encouraged. I don't know. He gets a little struggles back there. He gets a little bit nervous back there when guys are diving around his legs.
But he moves around the pocket better than any other quarterback that's in the game right now.
Sure. But if you brought up a Montana, if you brought an Elway into this day when you couldn't touch him and you couldn't touch the receivers, it's going to be pretty interesting to see.
It would be very interesting to see. I think that's one of the areas where I get sort of, you know, if we're going to bring in sacred cows, I still think Jay Cutler doesn't belong in the announce booth for many reasons, but one of the main reasons is because his game isn't over yet. I still think Jay Cutler is a serviceable quarterback in the NFL and is better than at least 50% of the guys that are going to be starting next year. So the fact that teams aren't calling Jay Cutler at this particular point in time to have them come in, to have him come in and lead their team and be a competitor. Why is Jay Cutler not with the Houston Texans right now? He's better than all of the quarterbacks on the Houston Texans at this current day and time.
You know, I guess the only answer I would have is that Bill O'Brien thinks he's smarter than everyone else. He thinks
he thinks he can pull something out of those young kids.
And I'm not saying he can, and you're right, Cutler is more talented than any of the guys they have on their roster. But Bill O'Brien is telling management, hey, I got this. Don't even worry about it. Not a concern. Well, it's been a concern the last few years. Their quarterback has been horrible since he's been there. But, I mean, we all remember Hard Knocks. Guys, they're saying we don't have a great quarterback, and I'm looking in this locker room and we do. No, you don't, and it's not going to get any better.
Is it completely out of the question that Jay Cutler could have returned to Denver?
I don't think that John Elway would have brought him in. Remember, he wasn't Elway's pick. Mm. Elway wasn't involved with the team at that point. I don't think Elway would have seen anything in Cutler to bring him in. Elway's a different dude. And I know we remember him as a player, everything. He is not afraid to do unorthodox things. I just don't know that he saw anything in Jay Cutler that he looked at it and said, he's going to cost me a lot more money, and he's probably going to be a pain on some level. I don't think he would have dealt with that.
Hmm. But probably because he saw the same player. To me, I'm not saying Jay Cutler is John Elway, but there's a lot of John Elway's game in Jay Cutler.
Sure there is. No, and if you're not as arrogant as Jay Cutler, you don't last very long. That's just a fact. Got a huge arm, thinks he's the best quarterback. There's a need for good quarterbacks out there. I was shocked that someone didn't pull him in. There aren't that many great quarterbacks out there. I genuinely was surprised when he signed that contract to go up into the booth, because I thought, there's got to be teams out there that need him.
There has to be. And similarly with, I mean, Romo too. I think Romo still has some game. My guess is there's something more with that back injury.
That is exactly what it is. I don't think he's healthy. But Cutler, I've been saying this since last year, Cutler's going to be a Jet. That's going to be a perfect fit. He'll go out there. Yes, he'll be horrible, but he'll go out there and he'll still do better than Fitzpatrick was doing. I was surprised they didn't make it happen, but Woody Johnson's a weird guy, so I don't know.
I mean, the only other thing that I can think of, I mean, to me, I think Cutler would be an upgrade for the Broncos. He'd be an upgrade for the Texans. He'd obviously be an upgrade for the Jets and for the 49ers. And I don't remember which superfan said it, but he'd be an upgrade for the Jets and the 49ers, but he'd be too good of an upgrade for those teams, meaning he'll help them win six or seven games, but he's not going to have them win 9 or 10 games, which is what it's going to take to get into the playoffs.
Well, and they are going to want to be awful. There are some decent quarterbacks coming next year. And so they're not going to win those 6 or 7 games. They're going to want to win 2 or 3 games and see if they can't get into that whole draft situation. Because there are some decent quarterbacks coming next year.
That's
and the kid out of USC looks like he could be the real deal.
I keep hearing about this class next year. They're comparing it to Elway's class.
No, it's not that good. Elway's class, I believe, had 16 quarterbacks taken. And what was it, 7 in the first round?
I mean, that is insane.
That's the greatest draft class in the history of the NFL.
Mm. Clint, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. You can find me on Facebook at Daily Dose Sports. It's DALY. There's not any extra vowels in there. But you can find me on either of those places. There's links to the podcast there. There's links to articles there. There's all kinds of goodies you can find at Daily Dose Sports.
Excellent. Clint Daly, Daily Dose, the podcast, available everywhere. Great podcasts are heard. Clint, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
All right, there goes Clint Daly. And we had a lot to talk about there. Make sure you're listening to his podcast, The Daily Dose podcast, available wherever great podcasts are heard, just like this one. And leave him a review. If you're not going to leave us one, leave somebody a review. That'd be nice. But you could always leave us a review. We like reviews. Even if they're bad reviews, we'll read them. So there we go. Sacred Cows. The Sunday guys decided to take on some hotly contested items and slaughter them on Sunday. One of them, as I spoke about there with Clint, is Tom Brady is not the GOAT. Now, Monty says in his defense that he did not say that there's no argument that Tom Brady is not the GOAT. What he said was that the argument that Tom Brady is the GOAT based on his 5 Super Bowl victories is what is really perturbing him. To that point, I agree. I don't believe that you can judge the greatest of all time solely on Super Bowl victories. However, as I mentioned with Clint, it does have to weigh in the conversation a little bit. Not the majority of the argument, but a little bit. And especially when we're talking about the last Super Bowl, which, may I remind you all, 28-3 was the score at one point, and it was deep into the second half that it was 28-3, and Tom Brady led that team back to victory. So that is why I look at Tom Brady as the GOAT, and as I mentioned to Clint, my skin is just crawling right now that I have to even defend Tom Brady. It's not natural for this to happen, but that's pretty much all I have to say about Tom Brady not being the GOAT. I'm sure.
Can I go first?
Go for it, James.
Okay. So let's start with Tom Brady because he's not the GOAT, and I believe there was a running back that you all have there in New England, James White, who actually did more for that comeback than Tom Brady did.
By catching the passes that Tom Brady threw to him? Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Did he not score the last touchdown by running it in?
He did score the last touchdown by running it in. James White was definitely the co-MVP.
In fact, he ran the last Super Bowl 2 touchdowns, game, if I recall correctly.
Listen, James White did many a great thing in that game, but he did
and
not
was robbed of Super Bowl MVP.
Did not put the team on his back like Tom Brady
did.
Did
put the team on his back?
No, not at all.
He did. Oh gosh!
By the way, I'm not the only one that thought this. William Berry, who wrote in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast, says, "Wow, it's been a long time for this dusty nugget." Tom Brady could not make another team competitive? Ask a Redskins fan if Tom Brady made David Patton. Neil.
I've got to say, first of all, what a great name, Dusty Nugget. He sounds like a 1970s running back, doesn't he?
I don't know. But did Tom Brady make David Patton?
No.
No?
You know something, Jay? I don't get this. Tom Brady is clearly... He's certainly not the greatest person of all time, being the cheat that he is and now hiding concussions at this difficult time. But he is definitely, without doubt, the greatest quarterback of all time. I had Montana there for a long time ahead of him, but now on this last Super Bowl victory, Brady's the greatest of all time. It's barely a question. We shouldn't be wasting time on this when we could be talking about more interesting things like rain, but he's the best quarterback, no question about it. Time to move on.
Let's see here. Do I have any?
He also made Belichick into the greatest coach of all time. What more do you want?
Well, that becomes the question.
That's
too.
The
who came first,
oh,
the
Lord.
Chicken or the egg? Right? Was it Belichick or was it Brady that made the other one great?
Oh,
did
clearly
you get to that. Hold up. Really, first of all, are New England fans even sending Mo Lewis Christmas cards yet? Because, I mean, you all
How
still
dare
owe
you?
Him.
Don't you bring that name up on this podcast ever again.
Mo
I will
Lewis,
fire you so fast.
As far as Patriot fans go, Mo Lewis is the GOAT. Because without Mo Lewis, we wouldn't have Tom Brady. We're done.
No more of James today.
No pod. You
mute
Brady
Why
credit.
Can I mute him? There he is. Done. All right, he's muted.
You give Brady credit for clawing them back from being down 28-3 down. If Brady was so excellent, why did they only have 3 points going into the fourth or third quarter? It's kind of a devil's advocate argument. I agree a little bit that championships should play into it, but as soon as you have one, like that's kind of the delineation mark. Like, you can have a lot, but that speaks more to you playing on a great team. I mean, Terry Bradshaw wouldn't be a better quarterback than, say, Dan Marino. I think most people can agree with that. So, you know, at this point, you've got tiers of quarterbacks. You've got Joe Montana, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and, you know, Aaron Rodgers might make it up into there. Who knows? But at that point, you're just kind of splitting hairs.
You know, at some point, the Matt Cassel argument got thrown in there, Nick, and you jumped into this conversation thread.
Sort of. I mean, yeah, I mean, to me, I think the whole Matt Cassel thing and the whatever two or three backups last year and things like that, like those are strong points in favor of it's more Belichick than Brady. But I mean, again, I think there's strong arguments you can make on either side of this. The biggest thing that swayed me in this conversation is I am now 100% sure that James White is the greatest quarterback of all time.
All right. Let's see if Eagles James has learned his lesson. Eagles James, what's the name you're not supposed to say ever again?
Let's be realistic. Mo Lewis, come on.
No! You're not even supposed to say an answer to the question when it's a direct answer. No. All right. Texans James, one of the sacred cows got slaughtered on the Sunday show that you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, Greg brought up how QBR is just a bogus statistical measure of how quarterbacks perform. Decided that passer rating, using the old trotted out argument of if it isn't broke, why should we fix it? And then the other old man argument of I don't understand numbers like 0 to 100, but 0 to 158.3 makes perfect sense because that's what I'm used to doing. As far as QBR goes, there's no statistical measure that's perfect, right? Like, you can try and argue, you know, yards are a good statistical measure or wins are a good statistical measure, but they're not because they don't provide any context for the information. Passer rating and QBR is a little bit different because QBR actually takes some context and puts it into that measure. You know, passer rating is four different things all on a per attempt basis. So it's completion percentage, yards per attempt, interception rate, and touchdown rate. And by the NFL's metric, a perfect game is a completion percentage of 77.5% or higher, 12.5 yards per attempt or higher, 11.875% of your throws have to go for touchdowns or higher, and no interceptions. But in reality, like, if a quarterback is running a 2-minute drill at the end of the half and he has to spike the ball, you know, that would count against him in quarterback rating or passer rating. But in reality, he's doing the right thing. He's increasing his team's chances of winning. Or if he throws the ball away as opposed to taking a sack, by passer rating, he'd be penalized for throwing the ball away, whereas for taking the sack or even fumbling on the sack, he wouldn't be penalized at all. So I'm against measurements that basically incentivize doing the wrong thing, which is what passer rating does as opposed to QBR. The other big point that Greg brought up is, well, how good of a stat could it be if Charlie Batch has, you know, the highest game ever? So I look back at quarterback rating or passer rating. There have been 7 perfect games in the past 5 seasons. We've got a number of super fans on here. Can you guys name any of the 7 different quarterbacks who've had a perfect passer rating in the past 5 years?
Jared Goff.
I know it's not any of the usual suspects. I think one is actually Aaron Rodgers.
No.
I think. Okay, no. So I'm wrong.
Wrong.
Nope. Your illustrious list, in no particular order, Kirk Cousins. Okay, sure. We can get on board with that. RG3, so Neil actually has the two two quarterbacks with perfect games, which we know their quarterback situation is settled up in Washington.
I know great quarterback play.
Marcus Mariota had a perfect game. Ryan Tannehill had a perfect game. Alex Smith had a perfect game. And another Smith had a perfect game. That would be Geno Smith. So you're going to throw out Charlie Batch as the way that QBR dies, because how could Charlie Batch have a good game? But Geno Smith had a perfect game by quarterback rating. You know, that doesn't speak well to that. 11 of the quarterbacks who have had a perfect game have also had a zero quarterback rating. So this just speaks to the fact that any measurement is going to have an outlier every once in a while. And so it just kind of goes into the whole, mix-up of QBR at least provides some context to it. You aren't going to penalize them for doing the right thing, whether it's throwing a Hail Mary at the end of the half that happens to get picked off, spiking the ball, or throwing the ball away instead of taking a sack. Whereas passer rating, you do get penalized for that. And if there's any other measure that you need, Jay, since Tom Brady came into the league, he's had two perfect passer rating games. So have the Jets, one with Geno Smith and the other with Chad Pennington. So, you know, passer rating is definitely flawed in some way, shape, or form as well. You can look at career passer rating. Brock Osweiler has a passer rating that is above average for all quarterbacks since 2006. So if you look at any season in the NFL from 2006 or before, the average quarterback would have a passer rating lower than Brock Osweiler. That doesn't mean Brock Osweiler would be a good quarterback in any of those leagues. It just means that, you know, you have to provide some context with the information, which passer rating does not.
Hey, listen, all I've learned over the past few years is stats don't lie, but they are for losers, and they relish in them.
As well as James said, I'll admit to my ignorance of how these ratings work. I mean, obviously, if everybody's rated under the same criteria, then at least it gives you a picture. But James, do either of the ratings we're talking about take into account a third down completion being more valuable than a completion or first down or second down, for example?
So the QBR calculation that ESPN does, two of the metrics in it are basically expected points. And one of them is based off of passing and one of them is based off of rushing. And so on a first down completion, if you go into how you calculate expected points, a first down completion is weighted a little bit less than what a third down completion would be. Just especially on any possession that or any pass completion that would extend a drive. So like if you have a first down completion for 15 yards, it extends the drive. You'll get a boost in expected points that way. If you have a third down completion on like a third and one, or if you have a third down scramble on like a third and seven that results in a first down, you'll get a boost in expected points there as well.
So, and Jay, since we have our undoubted and very impressive expert in the house here, James, is there anything you'd want to add to these measures that would make them better? Is there anything that's missing?
Oh, I'm sure there's something that's missing. One of the things that I do agree with is that there's a lot of there's a lack of transparency with how ESPN calculates the QBR. You can kind of infer based on they have some breakdown of what all goes into it. But the one thing you could probably add right away to both passer rating and to the QBR is some normalization for the era that they play in, right? So if you go back to like 2006 and the average quarterback rating was, 78, here in 2016, the average quarterback rating was 87, a little bit more than 87. So a quarterback that would have been above average in 2006 is now below average in 2016. So if you could normalize based on what league average would be and just do something similar to like wins above replacement in baseball, that way you could, it wouldn't, again, there's no perfect measure, but it would at least give you a little bit more context of how much better a quarterback was playing relative to his peers, as opposed to just some number out there in the middle of nowhere.
Well, it's too bad we don't know somebody who used to work at ESPN and is buddies with all the research guys there.
Oh, yeah, it's really sad that we don't know anybody at all.
Well, we know somebody that used to be at ESPN. I would not want to wager on if they were buddies with people.
Oh. Wow.
Pickers to define what he did is actually work.
Wow, that's harsh too.
Way to throw Andrew Brandt under the bus there, man, dude.
let's tie up some loose ends here on the podcast with some news that straggled in. A couple of notes here from the Buffalo Bills. Yesterday, their quarterback Nate Peterman officially signed. Neil was so kind enough to respond to the tweet by the Buffalo Bills on Twitter, noting that he looks like a young Tony Romo, to which he also responded to Rob saying that if Tyrod Taylor has trouble picking up the new offense, he could start this year, would be bad for this season, but good for our draft picks. Neil says he loves Peterman. He'll be starting by week 8. And Derek Aubrey at DePoco05 responded saying that would be unreal. I don't think so, but it would be something. I do like this kid. Neil, let's talk about this here, Rob. What are your thoughts on Nate Peterman?
I like Peterman. I don't like him as much as Neil does, but I like him. I would thought he was a steal. I mean, they got him right at the end of the 5th round. He's a quarterback that I think is going to fit well with the system that they're running, assuming that they're going to run that kind of Denver offense that they recently ran. That's kind of the system where Dennison has come from. I like him. I don't know if he could be a number one and be like an above average starter in the NFL. That being said, he's someone who I think is good enough to deserve an opportunity. If things don't work out with Tyrod Taylor this year, they're not going to wait till the end of the year to bench him, for quote unquote business decisions. They're going to go to the kid early to see what he can do. I don't think the Bills are going to light the world on fire and make the playoffs or anything in 2017. I think, so if things aren't looking good, they're going to start looking at the young guys a little bit sooner than later.
Neil, what do you like about Peterman?
I actually thought Peterman looked the most ready for the professional ranks when he's coming out of college. Played in a good system that, comes across really well in the NFL. I just liked everything about him. The one knock about his play was his lack of arm strength, and I don't think that's a huge problem. The guy also has massive hands, and I think when you've got big hands, you can in the NFL improve your arm strength over seasons. I think he's ready. I think if nothing else, he'd be a great backup. And hey, Rob, if that guy turns out to be a decent starter, you're loaded with first round picks next year. It could really help continue this turnaround for your franchise.
Yeah, I mean, the arm strength thing, I don't buy into at all. I saw a metric that actually compared arm strength, and it happened to have him on it. And it also had Tyrod Taylor on it. And he actually had a better number as far as the arm strength went. I don't think that matters. I think that the hand size is a bigger deal because in Buffalo, anyone in the Northeast knows the way that weather kind of flows once you get into the winter months. I know the Bills in the past have looked for quarterbacks that have big hands so they can control it a little better as they're throwing it. And, as it gets into, freezing temperatures and it's snowing outside, it's beneficial to have a larger handed quarterback, or at least that's what they say.
Is he better than Patrick Mahomes? That's what I really want to know.
He's good. Yeah. I don't think he has as high an upside as Patrick Mahomes. But then I think he's a Peterman's more of a player. You think, yeah, we know we're going to get from him. He could be a reasonably good starter. I think Mahomes could be a great player, but I think you're more likely to see a very good Peterman than you are likely to see a great Mahomes. There's more risk with Mahomes, no question.
Yes, that's what I like to hear, Neil. Just so people like Nick can eat their words.
Nope.
Yeah, but if Mahomes turns out to be that great player, then it's been an absolute steal for the Chiefs.
Rob, you also got the middle linebacker that we had talked about a couple weeks ago that he finally found a home, and that would be Gerald Hodges.
Hodges coming to Buffalo, signed today, is actually wearing the number of the guy they released to bring him on board, which I thought was kind of funny. With the Bills, I think he's more of an athletic type. I I think just knowing their depth chart, I think he's going to end up playing the Will position in the 4-3. I think that Ragland still plays the Mike, you know, that inside traditional inside linebacker spot. But Gerald Hodge is sneaky athletic. I know, you know, if you go like, you know, the comparison numbers, they had players like Levante David and TJ Mosley, you know, who can move around a bit, is kind of the comparison. So I'm interested to see how he fits in. I think getting him this late is going to be good. It's a one-year deal, but there's got to be value in it. I can't think this contract was for too much money. And you get someone who's looking to, you know, do a restart on their free agency. The Bills did the same thing last year with Zach Brown, and it worked out pretty well for them in that regard because he ended up playing really well for them for most of the year.
The Chiefs took a look at him, and I would hope that the Chiefs would still add somebody, but you will see. I mean, I think the coverage pretty bare out in free agency now for inside linebackers, and so hopefully everybody's coming back into camp healthy, because that's the one area of the field that worries me a little bit. But yeah,
the Patriots, not to bring the Patriots back into the conversation, signed Andrew Hawkins. To me, Andrew Hawkins was a fantasy darling like what, 4 seasons ago. Really hasn't done anything, you know, since then, since he was with the Bengals. I don't expect him to remain on the roster, but maybe he will. I saw a report that it could be Danny Amendola versus Andrew Hawkins. I would think Amendola will win that battle just based on tenure, but I have been wrong about who the Patriots like to keep and cut before.
Is that battle going to be occurring on the time on the injury list?
Beat me to it, James.
Could be that too. The Browns sign Ryan Grigson to their personnel department. Oh, that's what not getting better looks like, Cleveland. But who's starting there anyway, Eagles, James?
Well, according to Brock Osweiler, it's going to be him, and I quote, "I think the proof is in the film for the past 2 years."
Well,
that is a direct quote from Brock Osweiler.
Well, in his defense, what film is there on the other quarterbacks on that roster right now?
Cody Kessler might be decent. You laugh. He might be okay.
Rob, I'll let you run with that. Go for it.
And now they have a really good offensive line. I think that Crowell, the running back, is a little underrated. I don't think they're going to be even good, but man, it's not a bad a situation as everyone thinks. Kessler's going to win that job, by the way. Kessler's winning that job.
Neil, is there any other news out of OTAs that are going on this week that we should discuss?
Jay, you can just forget OTAs. All you can do is play OTA bingo. And every time you hear that such and such a player is having a fantastic OTA day, or he's nailed the playbook, or any of these great exaggerated claims of players, then just stop and have a drink, join Rob, and
yes.
It won't take you too long before you're lying flat on your back. It's absolutely ridiculous, Jay. We've got Josh Doctson, who was injured last year, and now every day the reporters are saying, oh yeah, this guy's got it, he's in for a huge season, he's destroying defenders. Oh, gee. I just want to turn Twitter off sometimes.
I think everyone needs to turn Twitter off sometimes. Texans, James, though, since we were talking about rookie quarterbacks, it was an opportunity to go to you, but since now we're in OTAs, how is Deshaun Watson looking like in OTAs?
Well, I mean, you can basically copy and paste the Houston beat writer story from, you know, last year and the year before. Deshaun Watson putting in extra time, looking great in OTAs. This sounds familiar because last year Brock Osweiler was looking great and putting in extra time in OTAs. And the year before that, Ryan Mallett was looking great and putting in extra time at OTAs. I think that the news from the beat writers is more of a tool for agents and the team to help them in contract negotiations. And the reason I bring that up is currently Dwayne Brown, surprisingly, is the word that's used most frequently, skipped the optional or the voluntary OTAs because he's upset with his current contract situation. And so it's, you know, you hear it every year, whether it's a running back, a wide receiver. You often don't hear it with, you know, linemen or defensive players unless they're, you know, holding out for Richard Sherman money about how they're going to skip OTAs and be upset with that. And then I'm sure you're going to hear some rumors of this team is a little upset with how this player, Eddie Lacy, comes to mind, isn't quite in the shape that he is, you know, and that perfectly coincides with, you know, the start of kind of a prove it year for them.
Eddie Lacy, what a shame that he's no longer going to be the starting right guard. But, you know, I'm sure they'll find some extra lineman somewhere. Eagles, James, you have any thoughts on what's going on in Philadelphia? Anything good? Any news?
Other than the signing of Blount, I know you all probably discussed that last week. But I do know that it's going to signal the end for Ryan Matthews once he healthy enough to resume activities. He'll be cut at some point before preseason starts. Outside of that, I know that Michael Kendricks is still on the trading block if they can move him. And Alshon Jeffery is looking like the receiver we should have had all along. So Nelson Aguilar is on a short leash, though. If he doesn't make it out, there is talk that he may not make it out of camp.
Have you found any cornerbacks yet, James?
I'm sorry, cornerbacks. What are those?
Nick, do you have anything that you can suggest us to drink while we're talking about OTAs?
Well, there'll be more announcements on that coming soon. Is the reason why I am able to be here in the middle of the day on a Thursday is I am no longer a corporate employee. I am I've launched a micro distillery, although actually that launch publicly is coming soon. So keep an eye on my Twitter account, and I'll definitely be talking more about it on this show. But the wheels are in motion.
What in your Twitter is?
My Twitter is @ClaytonNicholas.
There you go. You mentioned OTAs, a sacred cow for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, already, you know, you guys have already talked about how pointless all the coverage out of OTAs is. I mean, a corollary of that that is just always annoys me this time of year is all the focus about attendance and just who's there, who's not. And there's always fans, and I'm sure it's every team, but there's always Chiefs fans that are just like, just going ballistic on veterans who are not at the voluntary OTAs. It's like, oh, Eric Berry's not at the voluntary OTAs. That's so disrespectful to the team or whatever. And it's like, dude, the voluntary OTAs are kind of like that unpaid, you know, like voluntary off hours training or retreat that your boss wants you to go to. And it's like, yeah, okay, if you're young, if you're new in the company, you're trying to make a name for yourself, you feel like you have something to learn, sure, go. But like respected veterans aren't going to those things. Upper management's not going to show up. I mean, if you're one of the top guys on the team, who there's no point in you showing up to stand around in pajamas and run through a few snaps of the base defense. Like there's nothing there for you. I'd rather see our young safeties running through all that kind of stuff. So every year there's always this crazy fan hate of just like, oh, these players are skipping voluntary OTAs. Like, well, it's like that, you know, extra training that your boss asked you to go to on Saturday and wasn't going to pay you for it. And no one, you know, in your division was even going to be there. And you skipped that. Like, that is the amount of the disrespect that these guys are showing.
All right, Neil, you're last up. What about the OTAs there in Washington?
Like I said before, a lot of guff about how everybody's looking and destructive, and it's going to be a great season. I think obviously the big question in Washington is Kirk Cousins, and is he getting a long-term deal or is he not? And to be honest with you, Jay, I don't really mind either way. Let's just get this season going. We don't really have any players really. Jordan Reed hasn't turned up, but that's fine. I think Matt Jones is the one kind of well-known player who looks like his tenure in Washington is coming to an end. So we'll see. But not a lot happening with us at the moment. We still don't have a GM. Unlike Rob's Bills, where they have like 10 different GMs, we don't have any. So that's also still in the pipeline. But otherwise, all quiet in Washington land.
Gregson's off the market.
Dan Snyder just pulls a Jerry Jones and becomes the GM himself, Neil.
He tried that once before.
Yeah, we. Those are not memories I like to recall.
All right, then. That's going to do it for the next Fan Up podcast. Under an hour and a half this week. Congratulations, gentlemen. Good job.
I can stretch it a little bit longer for you, Jay.
No, that's quite all right.
Okay. Just going back to Nick's.
It's raining.
just going back to Nick's excellent point about the OTAs and guys not turning up. There is one story, though, that may, I don't know. I just have a feeling that maybe Pittsburgh will rescind the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell if he doesn't get that signed soon. Tell him, you know, go find $12 million from some other team running back.
You really think it's going to come down to that? I can't imagine that would.
Well,
he's a big part of what they do in both running and passing.
We didn't think it would come down to that with Josh Norman and Le'Veon Bell has been known to love the old suspension now and again. $12 million is an awful lot for a guy who gets suspended.
That is very true. That is very true. But all right. Well, there you go.
What do you think? It's quarter past six here. So, but this will be out soon. This podcast. I'll give Greg about 45 minutes after it's published so I start getting abusive messages on Twitter.
I don't know. It depends on how fast he listens to it. But you mentioned more news from OTAs. We didn't even mention Ezekiel Elliott not at OTAs because he was in a car accident on Sunday. Apparently, he hit his head. So they're being cautious with him.
So has he got a sore head or has he got a Brady-style concussion?
Isn't that the same thing? I didn't know there was a difference between the two.
Where was his world-class offensive line to protect him?
Right.
Good point. Good point. Also failed to mention the Pro Bowl returning to Orlando next year.
Why?
Yeah. Not going back to Hawaii.
The game doesn't get the hype that it used to. I mean, leave it in Hawaii. Leave it conference. This is like the one thing Goodell has like completely butchered as his time as commissioner. And everything he does just makes it worse.
Well, every pro sports league wants to be the NHL when it comes to their all-star game, and it's just not going to work out. So the best thing Orlando has going for it right now is the Book of Mormon song about it, and now the Pro Bowl.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear you say anything about Disney being in Orlando. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I will end the show. No more stretching it out. We are the Next Fan Up podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at NFU Podcast and interact with us there. You can also interact with us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And we love emails. NextFanUp@gmail.com is the way to get in touch with us if 140 characters isn't enough for you. And we need applications, especially you guys in Tampa Bay and Detroit. We need a Lions and a Buccaneers superfan as we're getting ready to start recording our division previews. You're going to want to jump in and be a part of that as all month long through the month of June, we will do a division on each and every podcast. So it'll be the AFC East, the NFC East, the AFC West, the NFC West. I'm not going to name all the divisions. You know what they are. And we'll do that all through June. And we want to hear from you. So please send in those emails, tweet us, Facebook us, all that good stuff. Here comes the backup quarterback from Pittsburgh, Landry Jones. There you have it.
Next week will be next week. Today I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to go back home and hang out.